This is Bulls Beat on Bulls Unlimited. Bulls Beat is your stop for exclusive interviews, highlights, and the very latest on all sports at the University of South Florida. With today's show, here's your host, Derek Sharp.
Hello, and on this Monday program, we're going to give you some more school records falling in a great event for track and field as the outdoor season is in full blast. We've got baseball and softball recaps and some dramatic softball highlights from, well, two defeats over the weekend. Unfortunately, for the fourth time, it's been win the first game in the series and then drop the next two, although certainly the last game of the Bulls in North Texas could have gone either way. We'll give you a full recap of how things are going from around the league as well. Remember, we used to do a show around the American, but for personal reasons, namely, it was probably taking up a little bit too much of my time when we had other things going on, particularly this year with the new duties of being the host for Bullseye, the coaches show. We got another one to tell you about coming up this week, by the way. We're not doing a show called Around the American anymore on Bulls Unlimited, but it does fit Bulls Beat to tell you what's going on elsewhere in the conference and where the Bulls sit in it, particularly in baseball. Unfortunately, again, after winning their first series, the Bulls won the first game in Charlotte and then dropped the next two, including a dramatic late situation like softball on what would be Saturday afternoon. We will also give you some of Alex Scola. She was actually a guest with Dave Mishkin during the intermission of the Lightning game a couple days ago and had some interesting things to say, an update on the program. And on Friday, had a chance to swing by. Oh man, here we go with the golf puns way too early on a Monday. The USF Golf Center to talk to top player Melanie Green and her head coach Erica Brennan on Melanie going to Augusta to play in the Women's National Amateur event, and it's a big one, and we'll talk more about that. You'll hear a little bit from both the participant and her coach, who will no doubt be going to Augusta with her. Golf season is starting to come down to the end, and the Bulls are very much up there in the national rankings, and Melanie is certainly up there and one of the best student-athletes on all of the campus. We've also got tennis. The men, we said, had two very competitive matches against very competitive nationally ranked teams at home this weekend, and unfortunately they lost them both 4-3. It's setting up for the men maybe to get all their disappointments out of the way in the actual regular season and then hope to bring home a conference championship. We'll touch on tennis for sure. So track and field, you can get all the details on GoUSFBulls.com. I'm telling you, the Pepsi relays in Gainesville are quite the event. It's cool because you have the best high schoolers from the state, and then you have, of course, a lot of the top collegiate athletes from around the country. Southern Cal, I saw here. Of course, all the powerhouses in the state of Florida. And it was just awesome that you had so many Bulls qualified to be at this event. And again, a couple of wins. Goodness Aradia. And this is a young man that transferred from, well, a school that has a connection to the Bulls. You probably know Cumberland. That was the school that the Bulls football program played in its infancy. Well, he came from that small program to the big Division I level and has been shining in it. We're going to meet him and talk to him. He won his division in the long jump. Now you had the elite performers that had met a certain standard in a separate event, and two Florida Gators ended up hitting 8 meters and 7.84. Yeah. That's a big difference. Malcolm Clemens, and you had this going on all day and all weekend long, by the way, in Gainesville. New Division I top marks being sent. That was in what they call the college invite division in the regular but very loaded still long jump division. Goodness Aradia was the winner with a 7.48, which is top 30 in the country as far as long jumps go. Vincent Uwoke finished with the second best throw in program history in the discus on Friday. Jasmine James, who was ninth, had the fourth longest throw. Women's shot put, James was second. So another athlete that we don't talk too much about but wanted to mention. And you look at some of these individuals on the relay teams, the Bulls add Gabriel Maranta from Mississippi State. And on Friday, he was part of the fastest 4x4 relay performance in program history just to qualify for the finals. And then they actually switched it up. Devontae Archer and Darian Mills were on that, again, school record qualifying time. And then they were replaced by Trayshawn Bowie and Nathan Metellus, who was the transfer from Bethune-Cookman, along with Maranta and Chavoy Reed, to again break the school record by more than 3 seconds of what they'd just done on Friday, and that put them in third place. A new school record in the 4x4 women's relay. Shania Benjamin, Zariah Ahlers-Lebird, Taryn Peterson, and Janiah Burton, they came in third place as well. And another school record in the 4x100 relay, and this was the big one, where the Bulls won. Zaquan Lincoln, Jaleel Kroll, Metellus, and Abdul Rashid Saminu not only win with a program record, but the new second best mark in all of NCAA outdoor season, a time of 39.03 seconds, nearly 0.2 of a second ahead of second place Campbell, which was sixth in the country, and Virginia Tech was right behind them, then Southern Cal. Yeah, there were some big name schools at the Pepsi Relays this weekend. In the 200 meters, Jaleel Kroll, second fastest time in school history. He was seventh. For the women, Shania Benjamin, who's been battling with teammate Zariah Ahlers-Lebird, constantly setting the school record in the 200-meter dash. She broke it again as far as the school record goes and finished fourth place in the event. All these fantastic performances being turned in by head coach Eric Jenkins' squad. You can see them in person this weekend. The South Florida Invitational was Friday and Saturday. Then after that, several more meets before the AAC Championships. The Bulls hosted it last year. It'll be at UTSA this year, May 8th through the 11th. Now on to baseball and softball. Baseball on the road. We will not be flying with the team this year. We'll be going on the bus to DeLand and hoping for the end of a two-game losing streak, which, well, didn't look like it was headed for that. Looked like it was headed for another Bulls series victory this past weekend. Remember, the weather around Florida meant the Bulls could not get out of Florida as they planned to for a first game Thursday, meaning they played a doubleheader on Friday and got what you dream about when you have a doubleheader, and that is a complete game. Hunter Mink, and this game ended up being 11-2, but there were absolutely some tipping points in the middle of this game that all went in the Bulls' favor, and hey, they came in with a 15-10 record. Charlotte was 11-14, and the record sort of reflected what happened in the first game, which was a lot closer than the 11-2 score made it sound, as the Bulls put it away with 5 in the ninth. But this game was back and forth early. Great to see Ben Rosenblum after, of course, his first chance to swing the bat, his first pitch he saw after talking to Kaylee Cottrell and Jim Lauk on Bullseye, saying how he's paid a lot of attention to the weight room and gotten stronger, and boom, I mean, he just jacks one well out. Left fielder barely even moved. And then after a Jackson Mayo double, Joaquin Moncayo, who had a big day, would stroke an RBI single. Charlotte would get one back with a two-out double, but the Bulls answered back with a walk, a bunt, and a Matt Rose re-entering the lineup, double down the right field line. Then the score stayed that way until a home run by Charlotte's 6'4" slugging shortstop, who's got 8 home runs now, Juan Correa. However, the Bulls answered right back. Jackson Mayo had a big day, and Joaquin Moncayo with hits, Moncayo's being a single, and then Stuart Puckett jacks his first career home run deep to left center. And that gave the Bulls the comfortable 6-2 margin. They would grab 5 runs, as I mentioned, in the top of the ninth. 2 RBI hits by Mayo and Montez. Mayo with 3 hits and 2 ribs. Same for Moncayo. And 2 hits apiece for John Montez and Matt Rose. And yeah, Hunter Mink finished it off. Even though the Bulls were scoring those 5 runs in the top of the ninth, Billy Moe wanted to give Mink the chance, if he could, to finish the deal. Those 123 pitches finished with the strikeout and 4 hits, 6 strikeouts, and 2 walks. That's what you want in the first of a doubleheader. Been a while since a pitcher not named Colin Sullivan pitched a complete game for the Bulls. It happened back in April of the 21 season. That's the season the Bulls would go on to win the Gainesville Regional and, of course, the conference championship before that. And I was racking my brain. I don't remember calling the 7-inning complete game shutout for Colin Sullivan April 25th of 2021, and then it all came kind of flooding back. That was the season after COVID where everything in conference, and boy, we'll never do this again, was a 4-game series because you just didn't have as many pre-AAC or anywhere around the country pre-conference games, and so you had to try and bulk up your schedule with back-to-back doubleheaders in many days, and this was one of those. So Colin Sullivan, prior to that, of course, had a complete game at the AAC tournament May 17th, 2019, against Wichita State. So Complete games are not frequent in USF land or really anywhere around college baseball, and that's why what Hunter Mink did was so special. Pitching was solid, but it was better on the Charlotte end in the second game of the doubleheader. The Bulls lose it by the score of 7-3, and unfortunately Jack Siebert, who was so good in his previous start, got hit around in this one right from the start. Triple, HBP, RBI single, and then three runs in the inning after the Bulls had given him a 1-0 lead on Jackson Mayo's RBI double. After the big three-run bottom of the first pitch at the bottom of the second was a home run for Charlotte, so this was not Jack's day, even though, and he also gave up a leadoff homer in the bottom of the third, he would keep the game within range with his performance, going six innings and four earned runs while allowing six hits, five strikeouts, two walks through 100 pitches, and then Logan Beavis pitched the last two innings. So the Bulls, for a doubleheader to only have to go to the bullpen once, you'll take it, but just not enough offense. The Bulls stranded 11 in that game, including the bases loaded twice, the big one coming in the top of the third when it was still just 4-1, and they had the bases loaded with one out. Remember the one we told you about, A.J. Wilson? You are going to see him because his numbers are incredible. Yeah, he actually came in. It's not like their starter went very far. With one out in the top of the third, and guess what? He struck out two, and we told you on Friday's show that he was a pretty good pitcher. He went 5 2/3 out of the pen. Only struck out five. That guy's whip right now in 15 appearances is below one, and in 31 2/3 innings, A.J. Wilson has struck out 56. So yeah, the Bulls, once he came in and struck out two with the bases loaded, were probably not going to win that game. However, they had every chance to win the finale, and in fact, were ahead 8-5 with two out and one on in the top of the eighth on Saturday, and that's when Charlotte was able to get two walks. Chandler Dorsey relieved Lawson Gailey, who had been solid, but walked two guys to get the bases loaded. Dorsey comes in and doesn't get anyone out. Issues a bases loaded walk that made it 8-6 Bulls, a tying two-run single, and a go-ahead two-run double. The Bulls had really done a good job up until that point, going ahead with five runs in the top of the fourth inning. John Montez, a big old two-run homer, and Stuart Puckett, yet another home run. This was after a two-out error, by the way. The Bulls would have been still behind going to the bottom of the fourth. They took full advantage when Puckett homered. Boy, great to see him doing good things. And another homer by Montez made it 6-3 in the top of the sixth. Charlotte answered with two runs to draw to within 6-5. And then Drew Brutcher blasts a two-run homer, and the Bulls, again, look headed towards a series victory. Now, it must be said, Charlotte had plenty more chances to score. The Bulls just took more advantage of theirs. The final was 11-8, 49ers. Left on base, 10-2. And Bryce Archie just didn't give the Bulls what they had hoped. An inning and a third, 48 pitches, just 26 for strikes, allowed three runs. Riley Skeen was very solid out of the pen. So was Matt Brown. Again, this was going to be a bullpen-type day for USF, considering what their starters had done. And then the man you'd want to come in late out of the pen, Chandler Dorsey, again, did not get anybody out and suffering his first loss. And Tony Rossi, who's actually from Lake Mary and is their closer, big 6'3", 230-pound righty, pitched the last three innings to get his fourth save. He's got a 2.10 ERA, so they don't have a ton of great arms, but the Bulls saw all the good ones. And unfortunately, once again, it was 8-5 Bulls, one on, two out in the bottom of the eighth. And they walk three in a row, and everybody scores. So they're right there, but they dropped to 16-12. At 3-3 in the conference, remember, no sweeps in the first weekend. So as long as there weren't too many sweeps in weekend two, the Bulls will be right there near first place. But there were three sweeps. Bulls, by the way, batting average has popped up to 290 for the season. They're now at 57 steals. Ben Rosenblum with 15 of them. John Montez, with those two homers, now has five, tying him with Jackson Mayo. Mayo with 12 doubles, incidentally, and Montez leading the way with a 380 batting average. Then it's Drew Brutcher at 358. Mayo, 324. Brutcher's on-base percentage, though, is 537. He's got that strikeout-to-walk ratio in a good spot, 36 walks and only 24 strikeouts. Still, it's going to be a challenge, and then the Bulls host Wichita State this weekend. Said that what you didn't want, and it doesn't seem like asking a lot, was for none of the other four series to go to a sweep, but three of them did. Wichita State took all three against Rice, 7-5, 10-3, and 15-3. So Yeah, the Shockers kind of put it on the team that is expected to finish at the bottom of the league. Now, the two teams that faced each other and had both won their first series, you figured this would be a 2-1 either way. Nope. UTSA won 2 of 3 in New Orleans against Tulane, pretty convincingly, actually. And then you can't be surprised by this one, East Carolina defeating UAB in sweeping fashion. Doubleheader on Friday went in their favor, 6-2, and 4-3 was the big one, and then 7-1 on Saturday. The other series, Memphis, after winning a close one against FAU, well, that's the one they needed because the Owls got them 13-5 and 14-3. So add it all up, and the Bulls go from being in a five-way tie for first to being in fifth place, and two teams are 2 games ahead of them. Still a long way to go, but Wichita State and UTSA are both 5-1. East Carolina and FAU 4-2. Bulls and Charlotte, the team they just lost to, 3-3. Tulane and Memphis dropped to 2-4, and two of the newcomers at 1-5 are UAB and Rice. And again, the Bulls welcome in one of those tie for first teams this weekend, Wichita, so they'll have a chance to change their own fate. Well, softball's fate is sealed as far as trying to win a regular season title. And as we've seen so far, not just with games involving the Bulls, but all over the new American Athletic Conference, I don't know that conference seeding is going to matter because whoever's in eighth place is going to be a good team. It's going to be East Carolina or the Bulls the way things have started. And by the way, East Carolina, which handed Charlotte, a really good Charlotte team, a defeat last week, and gave FAU all it could handle this week, is in eighth place. And the Bulls, at 4-8 in the conference, are in seventh place, but clearly are right there with the top teams in the league. They're just not able to finish things off, unfortunately. And what's been the problem is, simply put, after getting a solid start in game one, of course, they've won all four of their first games in series, they have not been able to follow that up in game two. Belle Sarja, the junior college transfer, whose overall numbers are fantastic. She's got a sub-3 ERA, but if you dig into it as far as just in conference play, that's 4 weekends in, her ERA is almost 7, and she struggled with control early. Again, this was after the Bulls had shut out North Texas and only walked one. She walked the first two batters she faced. This was on Friday. It was a 4 spot for North Texas, whose Kaylee Gamble has 39 career homers. She didn't homer this weekend, but she hit the you-know-what out of the ball several times, including a 2-run single that was on the ground in the infield and almost made it all the way to the wall. And then the key one, Molly Rainey, bloops a 2-out hit to right field, could have been caught. If so, it would have been, albeit fortunate, but just a 2-run inning. And instead, it was 4-0, and the Bulls never caught up. Although they tried, they chipped away.
Fifth-year college player, second year with the Bulls. Good contact hitter. And she lines that one. Speaking of, Ken Erickson will send the runner. Nice cut, bobbled out there in center field. Ryan Eigenman with her second hit of the day. It's an RBI single. And the Bulls draw to within a run.
Eigenman, who entered with just one hit in conference play, was one of the Bulls hitters who had a fantastic weekend. And boy, she would have a pivotal moment in the last game. But in this game, she had also singled along with Alex Wilkes, the freshman, to load up the bases. Bulls got 2 runs on a Kathy Garcia Soto sack fly and an Alexa Galligani RBI hit. That made it 4-2, and then you just heard 4-3. Belle Sarja would settle down. But in the top of the fifth, a leadoff double. UNT moved some runners around. And then one of their hitters who had been struggling in conference play but is a 300 career hitter, Lexi Cobb, who went 3-for-4 in this game, actually resulted in a fantastic defensive play, but her RBI double made it 6-3. The fantastic play was the relay throw in from Garcia Soto, and Ryan Eigenman actually, with the very edge of her glove, grazed the shoulder of the runner and kept a bases-loaded double to just a one-run scoring situation. But there was no keeping the scoring down as North Texas hit a 3-run homer in the top of the six. The Bulls faced Mackenzie Childers. Now, they had faced Skylar Savage in the opener. She had been their game one starter, and the Bulls scored 5 against her. Then it was Mackenzie Wagner, who had been their sort of right in the middle pitcher, and she was gone after 2 innings. So they bring in Childers, the sophomore, had all these strikeout numbers, and she was bringing the heat. That's why Camille Ortiz Martinez came in to try and connect with one.
Argument for not going there. There's a blast. We were talking about her power. That's gone. Camille Ortiz Martinez got into that one, baby. Power on power, 70 mile an hour fastball goes out at least that fast. And what a moment there. It is 9-5. That was the reason she was in the game.
And what looked and felt like game over throughout the course of the nearly 2 hours and 45 minutes of that one, all of a sudden had a different feel to it. And then, following what you just heard, Jordan Cadlip singles. But then Alexa Galligani, and we didn't know it at the time, and boy, Ken Erickson was fired up, and rightfully so. The first base umpire, with the runner at first, the third base umpire goes over to second if you only have three umps, called Galligani for not being able to check her swing, and it kind of fizzled out. Those were the chances for the Bulls, apparently, to score against Mackenzie Childers, who threw 108 pitches in that game, and by far looked the best and was the best of their three pitchers. We told you on Friday's show that North Texas kind of had three equal pitchers from a stats perspective. Well, she stood out to us and obviously stood out to her own coaching staff because she started the game Saturday. You want to talk about stuff deciding games early. This Childers, again, she has the stuff, but she's had, as recently as a month ago, back-to-back outings where she got a combined one batter out and gave up 8 runs. Well, she also has a game with 12 and with 13 strikeouts where she went the distance. Well, she only struck out 3 on this day. She was just out there on fumes. As a matter of fact, I think her day could have ended after one inning.
2-2 meanwhile. And that is a drill ball, but right to the shortstop, and that's a double play. Wow. You cannot get more unlucky than that. Eigerman absolutely hammered that ball. And I tell you what, Galligani was not far off at third base, but it'll go a line into a double play, 6-5, and what a pivotal moment that is. You can hardly fault the runner there. And it just felt like it was going to be a lead for the Bulls. What a break for Childers on the other side.
And it sounds ridiculous to say this considering she went 8 innings, but I think if she had given up a run there, that would have been her only inning. Skylar Savage was actually warming up in their bullpen in the second inning and never left it, but just sort of kept hanging around to see if Childers was going to give up a run, which never happened. While she struck out 6 in 5 innings of work on the win on Friday, she only struck out 4. The Bulls were hitting it off of her, but she was pitching to contact. It took her 80 pitches to get through the first 4 innings, and again, it seemed like she was going to be done. She only needed 39 pitches for the last 4 innings, and it was going to be about who blinked first. And Peyton Dixon, by the way, struck out 10, but she also walked 6. And North Texas finally took advantage in the top of the 8th.
First and second, 2 outs. Full count. Lefty on lefty here. Cut the tension with the knife, baby. Back to right field, and that is going to give North Texas the lead. And 2 runs. Gamble absolutely smashed that ball. Smashed it. A 2-run double.
She's a great hitter. They're a good team. We'll see how they do against Oklahoma State this week. We'll see if Childers pitches. If you didn't see my social media post, she was unable to get up. She was exhausted. And when I say unable to get up, she did not get up. She was being attended to by both teams' trainers for around 20 minutes. Obviously, the effects of the heat on a warm Saturday. After throwing, again, 108 pitches Friday night, she threw all 119 on Saturday as they felt, obviously, that she gave them the best chance to win. And I'm glad she's okay, just put it that way. Bulls right now look like, if you just peep at the standings, they're just a little bit short this year, but it is just a very little bit. Standings would dictate that North Texas is vastly superior, but you just heard it and I was there. They are so close. Yet, with what went on elsewhere, I'll give you full details on our podcast page later, but basically it was crazy elsewhere. And FAU won 2 crazy games with East Carolina to keep pace with North Texas atop the conference at 10-2. Then Charlotte, which won an even crazier series against Wichita. It, Wichita, and Tulsa are all at 8-4. And then there's a 3-game drop-off to the bottom half, and that's UAB at 5-7, then the Bulls at 4-8. But the Bulls play Memphis, which is 4-27 overall and just has 1 conference win. That's who the Bulls travel to this weekend, so a real chance to turn it around. Incidentally, Monday, the new RPI rankings came out. Basically, the Bulls and North Texas flop spots. Bulls drop out of the top 50 into 64. Charlotte 33, Wichita 38, FAU at 30-8 overall, by the way.
in the 44 spot. Tulsa right on 50. So four conference teams in the top 50, then North Texas 57 and USF 64. So while I really don't think where they finish in the standings, as long as they're in the top eight, because the bottom two aren't going to make the conference tournament, it's going to matter as far as conference tournament matchups, because clearly it's a competitive league almost top to bottom. At least everybody that makes the conference tournament can beat everybody else. The problem with this 4-8 start in league play, it has not wiped out all the good that their pre-conference schedule did, but now you're at a point where you still have games against Wichita and FAU at home, by the way. They're going to have to sweep one of those opponents and beat the other 2 out of 3 in order to not have to win the conference tournament.
So that was a heartbreaking series defeat. Men's tennis has gotten it beat as far as heartbreakers go this year. They lose two incredibly close matches this weekend, making it four losses in a row, all to teams inside the top 50 or very close in the case of Liberty, ranked 55th. That's who the Bulls lost to on Friday, winning the doubles point in thrilling fashion in a tiebreaker at court one with Alvin Todorica and Eric Grevelius. And it's funny, none of the matches went to a third set. One was going to a third set when things got clinched by Liberty on court two. But then against an even higher ranked team, VCU, on Sunday, Bulls again win the doubles point, meaning they just had to try and split the singles. Well, Alvin Todorica got beat pretty handily, 6-2, 6-1. And there were tiebreakers on three of the other courts, and the team that won two of them basically was going to have the advantage, and that's how it played out. VCU, with three matches going to a third set, it was going to come down to who won two of those matches. And the Rams, who have three ranked singles players, get it done. So the Bulls are 9-13, which doesn't sound good, but I'm telling you, they are going to be a threat for a conference championship. You do have one more chance to watch them at home next Wednesday against FAU, then they'll head to Tulsa for the conference tourney.